Good day and welcome to the State of Obesity conference call. Today's call is being recorded, and at this time I'd like to turn the conference over to Jeff Levy. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much. Good morning, everyone. My name is Jeff Levy, and I'm Executive Director of Trust for America's Health. Thank you for joining us today for the release of State of Obesity, Better Policies for a Healthier America, a report we are releasing with the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. A copy of the full report, including state-specific information, is on stateofobesity.org, which includes a range of maps, graphics, and other interactives, all available for media use. I'm pleased to be joined today by Abby Kofsky, Senior Program Officer at the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, and Kent McGuire, President and CEO of the Southern Education Foundation in Atlanta, Georgia, and a member of the Board of Directors of Trust for America's Health. I'm going to start with an overview of key findings. Kent will discuss the state of obesity prevention in schools and child care settings, and Abby will follow with a discussion of the progress we've made as a nation. Then I'll open up the call for questions. This is the 12th annual edition of the report, and we know that the obesity epidemic is one of the nation's most serious health crises. Around 17% of children and more than 30% of adults are obese, putting them at increased risk for a wide range of health problems, and it adds billions of dollars to the nation's health care costs. The point of the report is to focus on strategies to prevent and reduce obesity and lower rates of obesity-related illnesses. At one level, there's always an element of personal responsibility involved, but the scope of the problem makes clear that change cannot and will not be achieved by treating this as a problem of personal failing. Rather, success requires finding ways to make healthy choices easier in our daily lives, to give children the chance to grow up at a healthy weight, and to give all adults the opportunity to be as healthy as they can be, no matter what their weight. This year, we've seen obesity rates continuing to stabilize across the states. They only increased in a statistically significant way in five states and remain statistically the same in the rest of the states, with no states decreasing. We view this as a sign of progress, that the efforts made to help curb the epidemic over the past few years are having an impact and are evidence that if we invest in effective programs, we can make a difference. But to date, the investments made have been limited and haven't been sufficient to turn the tide. While stable, rates remain very high. 20 years ago, no state had a rate above 20%. Now, three states are above 35%, 22 states are above 20%, and no state is below 21%. And childhood obesity rates, while stable for more than a decade, are more than three times higher than they were 30 years ago. Some additional noteworthy trends from this year's report include 23 out of 25 states with the highest rates are in the South or Midwest, and rates of diabetes and high blood pressure are also highest in the South. There are persistent and troubling inequities related to race, ethnicity, income, and education. Adult obesity rates are at or above 40% among blacks in 14 states. Rates are above 30% in 42 states for blacks, 30 states for Latinos, and 13 states for whites. For American Indian and Alaska Natives, more than half, 54%, are obese. Individuals with lower incomes and lower educational attainment are disproportionately more likely to be obese. Nearly 33% of adults who do not graduate from high school are obese, compared to 21.5% of college graduates, and more than 33% of those who earn less than $15,000 a year are obese, compared to 24.6% of those who earn at least $50,000 a year. Age also makes a difference. Nearly 40% of middle-aged Americans, ages 40 to 59, are obese, compared to just over 30% of adults under 40 and 35% of adults older than 60. We're also seeing higher rates of severe obesity. More than 6% of adults have a body mass index of 40 or higher. This includes 8.3% of women compared to 4.4% of men. For children, while the overall rates have been stable, it's troubling that among young children ages 2 to 5, 1 out of 12 children is obese, and by the ages of 6 to 11, 5% of kids are severely obese. That's a lot of numbers, but you can also find them again at stateofobesity.org. Two major takeaways from the report and from studying this epidemic for more than a decade are that prevention, particularly among children, is key. It is easier and more effective to prevent obesity than it is to reverse trends later. The most effective strategies focus on reducing rates at a population level, and the biggest dividends are gained by starting in early childhood, promoting good nutrition and physical activity so children can enter school at a healthy weight and stay on a track to be healthy as they age. The other major takeaway is that healthy communities can help people lead healthy lives. Small changes that make it easier and more affordable to buy healthy foods and beverages and be physically active can lead to big differences. We do know a lot about what works. Now we just have to invest in these approaches. Experts have identified a range of policies and programs, such as improving school nutrition, complete streets initiatives, preventive healthcare services, and walking programs that can help support healthier opportunities within our communities. But we also see in the trends that lower-income communities often face higher hurdles and need more targeted efforts. With that, I'll turn the call over to Kent McGuire, President and CEO of the Southern Education Foundation, who will discuss the state of obesity prevention among our children. Kent?
Jeff, thanks a lot. Listen, I think the numbers in the report speak volumes about how limited our efforts to focus on obesity prevention really are in schools. We have very modest investments in nutrition, very weak ties between the education and health sectors generally. Over the last decade or so, there has been some increase in kind of school-based clinics and health centers. But overall, the penetration of those services in the schools has barely eclipsed, say, 10 to 15%. Across the country. So, for the most part, our schools are on their own to address these issues. Interestingly, over that same 10-15 year period of time, both as a combination of the kind of fiscal stress in the K-12 space and an increased focus or emphasis on school accountability in reading and mathematics. The net effect of these two trends has been that quite a number of programs, but in particular physical education, has been diminished. Add to that a growing trend of new schools, charter schools in particular, facilities that don't have gyms in them, much less certified personnel to run those programs. So Jeff, for all of these reasons, we have a very weak or fragile infrastructure for engaging kids, particularly early, in movement and healthy activity. There are patterns of segregation and isolation by race and income that reveal that the kids who are least likely to have access to these services in or through schools are in the neighborhoods and communities with the greatest need. You made a point a little bit ago about the high concentration of the South being overrepresented. I would simply observe that the high rates of obesity are correlated with high rates of overall poverty in the South, highest rates probably in the country of child poverty, and surprisingly low access to to health care, the lowest achievement levels among kids, and the lowest post-secondary completion rates in the country. So we can't be surprised at how the South appears in these findings. That's what I'd have to say. I wait for questions. And go back to you, Jeff.
Okay, and thank you, Kent. And with that, I will turn it over to Abby Kosky of the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation.
Thank you, Jeff, and thank you, Kent. For us at the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, we see this report as an urgent call to action because it shows us that obesity continues to remain one of the biggest threats to the health of our children and to our country. Obesity rates among both children and adults are far higher than they were a generation ago. In the past decade, we've seen some encouraging signs of progress. Adult rates appear to be leveling off. We've gone from seeing obesity rates rise in most states year after year to now, as we see in this report, seeing increases in just a few states. The data among children is encouraging as well. Last year, we saw data showing that obesity rates among children ages 2 to 5 declined over the last decade. This shift may be a short-term trend, but it's a trend that we are watching closely, and it's encouraging. In 2013, CDC published a report showing obesity rates decreased among preschool children in 18 states and one U.S. territory. These children are enrolled in federal health and nutrition programs like the Supplemental Nutrition Program for Women, Infants, and Children, or known as WIC. This is the first time in decades that rates have dropped among young children from low-income families, families who typically have higher rates of obesity. Recently, we're seeing that more school districts, cities, counties, and states are reporting declines in their childhood obesity rates, too. These reports are coming from areas as diverse as Tennessee, Seminole County, Florida, Lincoln, Nebraska, Chautauqua, Weyerhaeuser School District, and Wisconsin. These areas differ in many ways, but they all have one thing in common. They made the issue a priority. They worked together tirelessly to make it easier for children and families to be active and eat healthier food at school and in the community. Reports like this one are encouraging because they tell us that we can make a difference, that if we confront this challenge of obesity from every angle, we can move the needle. And it is these signs of progress and because of the fact that obesity still remains a significant challenge, earlier this year, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation announced that we are committing an additional $500 million over the next 10 years to expand efforts to help all children grow up at a healthy weight. Building on a $500 million commitment made in 2007, we have dedicated more than $1 billion to this issue. With this new commitment, we are focusing our efforts on five big bets. The first is to ensure that all children enter kindergarten at a healthy weight. We know that preventing obesity early in life is critical. If children enter school at a healthy weight, they're more likely to maintain that healthy weight into adolescence and adulthood. That means we're working with parents before children are born and building on the progress that we're already seeing in childcare settings. Number two, making healthy school environments the norm and not the exception in our country. Many children spend more time at school than any other place except their home, and every child should be in a school that makes it easy and fun for them to be healthy. Our third big bet is to eliminate the consumption of sugar-sweetened beverages among 0 to 5-year-olds. There's no reason for toddlers to be drinking sugary drinks. Water, we know, is a much better option. We need to build healthy habits from day one, and this is one way to do it. The fourth, making physical activity a part of the everyday experience for children and youth. Being active shouldn't be confined to one period during the school day, maybe 1 or 2 days a week. There should be lots of safe opportunities to be kids, to be active on the way to school, during, and after school. And finally, we want to make healthy foods and beverages the affordable, available, and desired choice in all neighborhoods and communities. we're committed to eliminating food deserts once and for all. Every parent in every neighborhood should be able to find healthy, affordable, and delicious food in the places where they live every day. With the release of this year's State of Obesity Report, we ask others to join us in committing to build a culture of health so that all children, no matter who they are or where they live, can grow up at a healthy weight. Achieving this vision will require all of us, individuals, parents, schools, communities, businesses, and policymakers to work together. The signs of progress are promising, but the stakes are too high not to push forward. So with that, I thank you for your time, and I'll hand the call back over to Jeff.
Thanks, Abby. Let's open up the call for questions now, but with a quick reminder that state-specific information is available for every state on the report's website, stateofobesity.org, and staff at Trust for America's Health and the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation are available to help answer any specific and follow-up questions anyone may have after the call. So, operator, I think we're ready for questions.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure the mute function is turned off to allow the signal to reach our equipment. A voice prompt on the phone line will indicate your line is open, and please state your name before posing your question. Again, please press star 1 at this time, and I'll pause to allow everyone the opportunity. We'll go first to Nadia Koenig, CNN.
My call. Hi, thanks so much for taking my call. One quick question in terms of how the data was gathered was based on phone calls and self-reporting of weight and height to determine BMI. I read in the methodology that there is a concern that perhaps then that the rates are underreported to a certain degree. I mean, do we have a sense of how much underreporting there may be or how much worse the situation may actually be in reality?
So that's a really good question, and I think we all know that, we all tend to, shall we, sometimes, and I think the common assumption is that people tend to say they're a little taller than they are and weigh a little less than they do. The numbers are not dramatically off from, they are somewhat lower, but not dramatically off from what we have learned from other surveys where there is actual height and weight measurement, like the NHANES data. That is more, but that data is only available on a national basis and not on a state-by-state basis. So the only data we have on a state-by-state basis is this BRFSS data that is self-reported. Whether there's a difference of, so the national obesity rate is about 35%, which obviously is a little bit higher than we're seeing in these numbers. That said, the difference between, the fact remains that whether it's using the BRFSS data or the NHANES data, we're at an unacceptably high level, and that's what we need to focus on. The reason for looking at this on a state-by-state basis is obviously the depth of the problem is different in every state, and we're seeing some regional differences, and it provides then the opportunity to do a crosswalk between what is going on in a state in terms of education and income and poverty rates and specific policies and programs to be able to do some comparisons there.
And we'll go to our next caller.
Hi, this is Mike Stovey from the AP. Thanks for taking my question. I had two, actually. One, the last speaker talked about childhood obesity, but I just want to make sure I'm not confused. There is no new data on childhood obesity in this report. Is that correct? And
correct.
I have a follow-up.
Correct.
Okay. Second one, for the five states that showed a statistically significant increase, Kansas, Minnesota, New Mexico, Ohio, and Utah, were they trending up, or do we know yet whether this is just a one-year blip? Can you give us some context of what's been going on?
Yes. So these are still relatively small changes, and so I think it would be premature to say this is a trend. especially since we're not seeing that much repetition from year to year. This is the sort of thing that we would need to look at several years of data before we saw a trend. But I think the overall message in this year's data, similar to last year's, is that for the most part we're seeing some stability in obesity rates among adults.
Thank you.
And we'll go to our next caller.
Yes, this is Jerry Hagstrom from the Hagstrom Report. There's so much emphasis on childhood obesity, but the worst rates are among adults. Do you see any efforts to reduce obesity among adults, and are there any that are effective?
So I'd let Abby speak to the reason for emphasizing children and intervening there, which is primarily that preventing obesity in the first place is always easier to deal with than after the fact. But certainly the stabilization of obesity rates among adults, I think, is a reflection of, you know, the broader trend that we are seeing in the country, which is greater attention to healthy eating and efforts to promote physical activity. There's no magic bullet in all of this. It is really much more a series of things that have created both policy changes and greater opportunities for people to be healthy, as well as a culture change as people are more aware of the health implications of obesity. So the goal here is for people to be healthy at any weight. Obviously, the lower the rates of obesity, the better. But there's also a lot of the interventions we're talking about that prevent obesity, like improving nutrition and increasing physical activity, can also help people who are already obese be healthier at the weight they are currently at.
And this is Abby Kosky. I would just reiterate the point that Jeff made, recognizing that the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation has chosen to focus on childhood obesity, given our emphasis on prevention and given, that the evidence continues to tell us that when we are able to ensure that children enter school at a healthy weight, they're able to maintain that healthy weight into adolescence and adulthood. But we also know that creating a culture that fosters a healthy environment for children also has benefits throughout the lifespan. So creating communities that are walkable, encouraging healthy eating, active lifestyles, again, those are messages, those are culture changes that we see going far beyond just young children.
As a reminder, star one to ask a question. We have no further questions at this time.
All right. Well, with that, I would like to thank both Kent McGuire and Abby Kosky for joining me today and all of you for listening in. Please feel free to follow up either at Trust for America's Health or Robert Johnson Foundation if you have any additional questions in the course of the day. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
This does conclude today's conference. Thank you for your participation.